We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Working the night shift at Walbaum's supermarket was usually uneventful. I liked the quiet, the solitude, and the chance to get work done without the usual hustle and bustle of the daytime crowd. The store was closed to customers, and my main tasks involved stocking shelves, cleaning up, and preparing for the next day. The fluorescent lights buzzed overhead, casting a sterile glow over the empty aisles. It was around midnight when the incident began, an experience that still sends chills down my spine. I was in aisle 6, stocking cereal boxes on the top shelf. The silence was comforting, broken only by the distant hum of the refrigeration units. As I worked, I heard a faint sound, like the rustling of paper. I paused, listening intently. The sound stopped, and I shrugged it off as the building settling, or perhaps a mouse. A few minutes later, the sound came again, louder this time. It was coming from the next aisle over. I grabbed my flashlight and walked around the corner, shining the beam down the long, empty aisle. There was nothing there. I chalked it up to my imagination playing tricks on me and went back to my task. The uneasy feeling lingered as I continued my work. Every so often, I heard faint footsteps echoing through the store. I told myself it was probably just the sound of my own movements reverberating off the walls. But then, I saw it, a shadowy figure at the end of the aisle, just for a split second before it disappeared around the corner. My heart skipped a beat. I quickly walked to the end of the aisle and peered around the corner, but there was no one there. I felt a growing sense of dread. The supermarket was supposed to be empty. The doors were locked, and I was the only one with a key. I tried to focus on my work, but my mind was racing. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. I moved to the back of the store, where the storage room was located. The large metal shelves were lined with boxes and supplies. The room was cold, and the fluorescent lights flickered intermittently. As I was sorting through a stack of boxes, I heard the sound again, footsteps, slow and deliberate, coming from the front of the store. I grabbed my flashlight and a box cutter and cautiously made my way back to the main area. When I reached the front of the store, I saw the shadowy figure again, standing by the entrance. It was a man, tall and dressed in dark clothing. His face was obscured by the shadows. My heart pounded in my chest as I called out, "Who are you? What are you doing here?" The man didn't respond. He just stood there, staring at me. I felt a surge of fear and anger. "The store is closed. You need to leave," I shouted, trying to sound authoritative. The man slowly turned and walked down an aisle, disappearing from sight. I followed him cautiously, the beam of my flashlight cutting through the darkness. When I reached the end of the aisle, he was gone. It was as if he had vanished into thin air. I tried to calm myself, reminding myself that there had to be a logical explanation. Maybe it was a prank, someone trying to scare me. I decided to check the security cameras in the manager's office. The small room was cluttered with paperwork and old files. I sat down at the desk and pulled up the live feed from the cameras. As I scanned the various angles of the store, my eyes were drawn to a movement on one of the screens. The man was back, standing in the middle of aisle 6, the same aisle where I had first seen the shadow. He stood perfectly still, staring directly at the camera, as if he knew I was watching. A chill ran down my spine as I watched the screen. The man began to move, slowly walking down the aisle toward the camera. His face was still hidden in shadows, but I could see his eyes, cold and menacing. He reached the end of the aisle and disappeared from view again. I felt a wave of panic. I had to do something. I grabbed the phone and dialed 911, my hand shaking. Walbaum Supermarket, night shift, I stammered. There's someone in the store. I think they're trying to scare me. The operator assured me that help was on the way, but the wait felt like an eternity. I locked myself in the manager's office, my heart pounding in my chest. I kept my eyes glued to the security monitors, watching for any sign of the intruder. Minutes passed, and the man reappeared on the screen, standing in the middle of the store. This time, he was closer to the office. I could hear the faint sound of his footsteps echoing through the empty aisles. The door handle to the office rattled, and I felt my blood run cold. I braced myself, clutching the box cutter tightly. The door swung open, and the man stood there, his face still obscured. "Who are you?" I demanded, my voice trembling. The man didn't answer. He took a step forward, and I swung the box cutter, the blade slicing through the air. The man stopped, then turned and walked away, disappearing into the darkness of the store. I heard the distant wail of sirens approaching, and I felt a surge of relief. The police arrived within minutes, their flashlights cutting through the gloom as they searched the store. They found no sign of the intruder. The doors were still locked, and there were no signs of forced entry.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
It was as if the man had never been there. The officers took my statement, but without any evidence, there was little they could do. They advised me to take the rest of the night off and suggested that the store install better security measures. I left the store, my mind racing with unanswered questions. Who was the man? How did he get in? And why was he there? The experience left me shaken, and I couldn't bring myself to work the night shift again. To this day, the memory of that night haunts me. Every time I pass by Walbaum's, I feel a chill run down my spine.
If you're enjoying it so far, subscribe so you don't miss any new creepy story.
The night shift at a gas station on a lonely stretch of country highway had its perks. It was usually quiet, giving me time to catch up on reading or listen to music. The occasional trucker would stop by to fuel up, but otherwise, it was just me and the endless expanse of darkness. I never minded the solitude until one night, when that solitude turned into something terrifying. It was around 2 a.m., and I was sitting behind the counter, flipping through a magazine. The fluorescent lights buzzed overhead, creating an eerie atmosphere over the small convenience store. the only sounds were the distant croak of frogs from the nearby fields. As I was engrossed in an article, I heard the bell above the door chime, signaling that someone had pulled up to the pumps. I glanced up at the security monitor and saw an old, beat-up car idling by pump number 3. The driver hadn't gotten out yet, and the engine continued to run. A few minutes passed, and the driver still hadn't moved. I felt a twinge of unease but brushed it off, telling myself that maybe they were just taking a moment to gather themselves. I returned to my magazine, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. I decided to step outside and see if the driver needed help. As I opened the door, the cool night air hit me, and I could hear the low rumble of the car's engine. I approached the vehicle, waving my flashlight to get the driver's attention. "Hey there, need any help?" I called out, but there was no response. I shone the flashlight into the car, and that's when I saw him, a man sitting in the driver's seat, staring straight ahead. His face was obscured by shadows, and he didn't even glance in my direction. A shiver ran down my spine as I called out again, louder this time. "Sir, do you need any help?" Still no response. He just sat there, staring blankly into the distance. My heart began to race, and I felt a growing sense of dread. I backed away slowly, keeping my eyes on the car. I returned to the store and locked the door behind me, my hands trembling. I kept an eye on the security monitor, watching as the man continued to sit in his car, motionless. The unease in my stomach grew stronger, and I decided to call the police. "There's a man sitting in his car at pump 3, I told the dispatcher. "He's been there for a while and isn't responding to me. It's really freaking me out." The dispatcher assured me that an officer was on the way, but it would take some time given the remote location. I thanked her and hung up, feeling a little more reassured but still on edge. A few minutes later, the man finally moved. He opened the car door and stepped out, his movements slow and deliberate. I watched on the monitor as he walked around the car, his face still difficult to see. He seemed to be looking for something, but I couldn't tell what. Suddenly, he turned and started walking toward the store. My heart pounded in my chest as I watched him approach. His gait was strange, almost robotic, and there was something unnerving about the way he moved. I quickly locked the inner door to the counter area and grabbed the phone, ready to call the police again. The man reached the door and tried the handle, finding it locked. He stood there for a moment, then began to pound on the glass, his face pressed against it. Fear surged through me as I backed away from the counter. The man continued to pound on the door, his expression wild and angry. I could hear his muffled voice, though I couldn't make out what he was saying. "Go away!" I shouted, my voice trembling. "The police are on their way." The man paused, his head tilting to one side as if he were considering my words. Then, he stepped back and disappeared from view. I rushed to the security monitor and saw him walking back to his car. He got in and drove away, his headlights disappearing into the night. Relief washed over me, but it was short-lived. A few minutes later, the police arrived, and I told them what had happened. They took my statement and assured me they would patrol the area, but there wasn't much else they could do. I stayed inside the locked store, my nerves on edge. Every creak of the building, every rustle of the wind outside made me jump. I kept the lights on and waited for my shift to end, counting down the minutes until I could go home. When morning finally came, I left the store and drove home, the events of the night replaying in my mind. I couldn't shake the feeling of dread, the image of the man's shadowed face pressing against the glass. I returned to work the next night, but the fear lingered. I found myself constantly looking over my shoulder, checking the security monitors more frequently. The quiet of the night, once comforting, now felt oppressive and filled with unseen threats. The police never found the man or his car. The experience changed me, making me more cautious and aware of my surroundings. I still work the night shift, but I'm always on guard, always watching for any sign of danger. A shiver still runs down my spine whenever I think about that night. The nights at the hospital had its own unique rhythm. The hustle and bustle of the day gave way to a quieter, almost eerie calm at night. Patients slept, the hallways were deserted, and the hospital, usually a place of constant activity, felt like a ghost town. I was a nurse in the ICU, and while I was used to the late hours, there was one night that made me question everything I thought I knew about the place. It started like any other shift. I arrived around 10 p.m., greeted my colleagues, and checked in on my patients. The soft beeping of monitors and the occasional whisper of a nurse or doctor were the only sounds in the ward. The dim lighting added to the somber atmosphere. Around midnight, I was making my rounds, checking on a patient in room 307. Mrs. Miller, an elderly woman recovering from surgery, was fast asleep. I adjusted her blankets and noted her vitals before quietly leaving the room. As I walked down the corridor, I heard a faint noise, like the distant sound of a child laughing. I paused, listening intently. The laughter seemed to come from down the hall, near the pediatric ward. I glanced at my watch. It was well past visiting hours, and all the children should have been asleep. Curious and a bit uneasy, I made my way toward the sound. The pediatric ward was dark, the rooms empty. The laughter had stopped, leaving an unsettling silence in its wake. I shrugged it off, convincing myself it was just my imagination, and returned to my rounds. An hour later, I was in the break room, sipping a cup of coffee and chatting with my friend, Layla, another nurse on duty. We were discussing our plans for the weekend when the lights flickered. We exchanged nervous glances, but laughed it off, blaming it on the hospital's old wiring. "Did you hear anything strange tonight?" I asked, trying to sound casual. Layla raised an eyebrow. "Strange how?" "I thought I heard a child laughing near the pediatric ward, but when I checked, there was no one there." Layla's expression grew serious. "I've heard stories about that. They say this place is haunted." I chuckled, though I felt a chill run down my spine. "Haunted? Really?" "Yeah," she replied, lowering her voice. "They say a little girl died here years ago, and her spirit still roams the halls. Nurses and patients have reported hearing her laughter, seeing her shadow." Before she could finish, our radios crackled to life. "Code blue in room 305. Code blue." We rushed to room 305, adrenaline pumping. Mr. Rodriguez, a middle-aged man with a heart condition, had gone into cardiac arrest. We worked quickly, performing CPR and administering medication. After what felt like an eternity, we managed to stabilize him. He was unconscious but alive. As we caught our breath, I glanced toward the doorway and froze. Standing in the hallway was a little girl, her long hair hanging over her face. She wore an old-fashioned nightgown, and her skin was pale, almost translucent. She stared at me with wide, unblinking eyes. "Did you see that?" I whispered to Layla, my voice trembling. She followed my gaze but saw nothing. "See what?" "The girl. There was a girl standing in the hallway." Layla shook her head. "You must be exhausted. Let's finish up here and take a break." I couldn't shake the image of the girl. As the night went on, I became increasingly uneasy. Every shadow seemed to move, every distant sound set my nerves on edge. I decided to check the security cameras in the nurse's station, hoping to find some explanation for what I had seen. I pulled up the footage and scanned the feed. The hallway outside room 305 was empty, just as Layla had said. I rewound the footage to the time of the code blue and watched closely. There was no sign of the girl. It was as if she had never been there. Frustrated and unnerved, I returned to my duties. As I passed the pediatric ward again, I heard the laughter once more, this time closer. My heart pounded as I slowly opened the door to one of the empty rooms. The room was dark, the only light coming from the hallway. In the corner, by the window, stood the little girl. She turned to face me, her eyes dark and hollow. A chilling smile spread across her face as she took a step toward me. I backed away, my breath coming in short, panicked gasps. "Who are you?" I managed to whisper. She didn't answer. Instead, she raised a hand and pointed to the door. I turned to look and saw nothing. When I turned back, she was gone. The room was empty. I ran to the nurse's station, my heart racing. Layla was there, and I told her everything. She listened, her expression a mix of concern and disbelief. "Maybe it's just stress," she suggested. "This job can do that to you." Determined to get to the bottom of this, I decided to do some research. During my break, I went to the hospital archives. I found an old newspaper clipping from the 1970s about a little girl named Abigail who had died in the hospital. She had been a long-term patient in the pediatric ward, and her death was a tragic accident. The pieces began to fit together. Abigail was the ghost haunting the hospital. I felt a mix of sadness and fear, knowing that this little girl was still wandering the halls. As my shift neared its end, I decided to visit the pediatric ward one last time. I needed to see her again, to understand why she was here. The hallway was silent as I walked toward the room where I had seen her before. The door creaked open, and I stepped inside. The room was empty, but I felt a cold breeze brush past me. I turned and saw Abigail standing in the doorway. She looked at me with sad eyes, and for a moment, I felt a connection, a deep empathy for this lost child. "Abigail," I whispered, "why are you here?" She didn't speak, but instead, her expression changed. The sadness in her eyes turned to anger, and her figure began to flicker, growing darker and more menacing. The room grew colder, and I could see my breath forming in the air. Suddenly, the door slammed shut behind her. Panic surged through me as I turned to face Abigail. Her eyes were now completely black, and her mouth twisted into a sinister smile. The room seemed to close in around me, the walls narrowing as I backed away. Abigail didn't move, just staring at me with a sinister gaze. I fumbled for my radio, my hands shaking. "Layla, I need help. I'm in the pediatric ward, room 313. Hurry!" The radio crackled with static, but there was no response. I was trapped, alone with this malevolent spirit. Just as I felt myself losing hope, the door burst open, and Layla rushed in, followed by two security guards. The room seemed to return to normal, the oppressive cold lifting. Abigail was gone, vanished into the shadows. I collapsed to the floor, trembling and gasping for breath. Layla and the guards helped me up, their faces etched with concern. "What happened?" Layla asked, her voice filled with worry. I could only shake my head, unable to find the words. The terror of the encounter had left me shaken to my core. I knew that Abigail's spirit was not at peace and that she would continue to haunt the hospital, a lingering presence in the darkness. I left the hospital that morning with a heavy heart, knowing that I had come face to face with something truly malevolent. The experience had changed me, leaving a mark that would never fade. The hospital now held a deeper, more sinister meaning for me. The corridors that I had walked so many times now seemed filled with dark shadows that I would rather not uncover. Being a police officer on night shift patrol in a rural area can be quiet, but it can also be eerie. The vast expanses of empty roads and the darkness that seems to swallow everything whole can play tricks on the mind. I had been patrolling the back roads of our small town for years, and while there had been a few unsettling moments, nothing prepared me for what happened that night. It was a cool autumn evening, the kind where the air is crisp and the sky is clear, dotted with stars. The full moon cast an ethereal glow over the landscape, illuminating the fields and the tree-lined roads. I was driving slowly, the police car's headlights cutting through the darkness, the radio crackling with occasional updates from dispatch. Around midnight, As I was making my rounds, I noticed a figure standing by the side of the road. It was unusual to see anyone out here at this hour, and my curiosity was piqued. I slowed down and pulled over, shining my flashlight on the figure. It was a woman, dressed in a tattered dress, her face pale and streaked with tears. She looked disoriented and frightened. I got out of the car and approached her cautiously. "Ma'am, are you all right?" I asked, keeping my voice calm and reassuring. She looked up at me, her eyes wide with fear. "Please, help me," she whispered. "I've been in an accident. My car is down the road." I called into dispatch, informing them of the situation and requesting backup. They acknowledged and said they would send someone out, but it would take some time. I turned back to the woman, who was now trembling. "Can you show me where your car is?" I asked. She nodded and began to walk down the road, her movements slow and unsteady. I followed her, keeping a close eye on our surroundings. The road was deserted, and the only sound was the crunch of gravel under our feet. As we walked, I noticed something strange. The air grew colder, and a thick fog began to roll in, obscuring the moonlight. My flashlight beam barely penetrated the mist, and I felt a growing sense of unease. We walked for about 10 minutes when I saw it, a car, partially hidden in a ditch by the side of the road. It was an old model, its windows shattered and the front end crumpled from the impact. The woman stopped a few feet away from the wreckage, her eyes fixed on the car. "Is this your car?" I asked. She nodded, tears streaming down her face. "I was driving home when I swerved to avoid something in the road," she explained. "I lost control and ended up here." I walked over to the car and shone my flashlight inside. It was empty, but the interior was covered in dust and cobwebs, as if it had been there for years. I turned back to the woman, confusion and concern mixing in my mind. "How long have you been out here?" I asked, trying to piece together the situation. "I don't know," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. "It feels like forever." I radioed into dispatch again, providing them with the location of the car and asking for an ETA on the backup. They told me it would be at least another 20 minutes. I could hear the frustration in their voices, they were as puzzled as I was. As I stood by the car, I heard a noise, a low, guttural growl coming from the woods. I turned, shining my flashlight into the darkness, but saw nothing. The woman began to sob, her fear palpable. "We need to get out of here," she said, her voice trembling. "It's coming for me." "What's coming for you?" I asked, my heart pounding. She shook her head, unable to speak. I took her by the arm and led her back to the patrol car, my senses on high alert. As we walked, the growling grew louder, closer. I could feel eyes on us, watching from the shadows. We reached the car, and I quickly opened the door for her. She climbed inside, her hands shaking. I got in and locked the doors, my mind racing. I had faced danger before, but this was different. This was something I couldn't explain. The growling stopped, replaced by an eerie silence. I turned on the headlights and drove back toward town, my eyes darting to the rearview mirror every few seconds. The woman sat beside me, her breathing shallow and rapid. "Can you tell me what happened?" I asked gently. She took a deep breath, her voice barely steady. "I was driving home from a friend's house when I saw something in the road," she said. "It was dark, but it looked like a person. I swerved to avoid hitting them, and that's when I crashed." I nodded, encouraging her to continue. "When I got out of the car, I saw it," she said, her voice trembling. "It was a man, but not a man. His eyes were glowing, and he made this horrible growling sound. I ran, but I could feel him following me." I felt a chill run down my spine. The woman's story was unsettling, but I had to remain calm. "You're safe now," I said, trying to reassure her. "We'll get you to the station and figure this out." As we drove, I kept a close eye on the road and the woods on either side. The fog had lifted, but the sense of unease remained. The woman fell silent, staring out the window, her fear palpable. We were about halfway back to town when I saw it, a figure standing in the middle of the road, illuminated by the headlights. It was a man, tall and gaunt, his eyes glowing with an unnatural light. He stood perfectly still, watching us. I slammed on the brakes, the car skidding to a halt. The woman let out a scream, her terror filling the car. I grabbed my flashlight and opened the door, stepping out cautiously. "Stay in the car," I told her, my voice firm. "Lock the doors." I approached the figure, my heart pounding in my chest. "Who are you?" I called out, my flashlight beam cutting through the darkness. The figure didn't move or respond. As I got closer, I could see that his skin was pale and stretched tight over his bones. His eyes glowed with a malevolent light, and the growling sound began again, low and menacing. Fear surged through me, but I forced myself to stay calm. I took a step back, keeping the flashlight trained on the figure. The figure took a step forward, and I felt a wave of dread. I turned and ran back to the car, jumping in and locking the doors. The woman was crying, her fear mirroring my own. I started the car and sped away, the figure disappearing into the rearview mirror. We drove in silence, the tension thick in the air. I radioed into dispatch, informing them of the encounter and requesting immediate backup. We reached the station, and I escorted the woman inside. She was still shaken, but she was safe. My colleagues took her statement, and I filled out my report, detailing the night's events. The police searched the area where we had seen the figure, but found no trace of him. The woman's car was towed, and the investigation was left open, the mystery unresolved. In the days that followed, I couldn't shake the memory of that night. The figure's glowing eyes and the eerie growling haunted my thoughts. The night shift, once routine, had become a source of dread. If you enjoyed this video, make sure to subscribe to our channel and hit the like button for more terrifying tales. Don't miss our latest video, Scary Park Ranger Horror Stories, where we delve into eerie and unsettling experiences faced by park rangers. These stories will make you see the wilderness in a whole new light. See you in the next video.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
Here, care has no limits. It's compassionate, personal, powerful, and provided to anyone and everyone who needs it. Here at Mount Carmel, care honors everything that makes us who we are, so that you can take the first step to a healthier, happier life. Here, exceptional care is provided by all of us, for all of you. Learn more at MountCarmelForYou.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.